I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Memo. It's Thursday, October 15th. I'm Derek Russell. Glad to be back with you again alongside producer and today co-host yet again, Chris Kiefer.
I'm back.
We got rid of Brad for today so we could just come in here and make fun of Brad's hair now.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot easier to do while he's not here.
I have no business making fun of him about his hair, I'll tell you that much. Happy birthday, Chris.
Thank you.
Happy birthday. How old are you? 27?
27.
27.
Maybe 33.
33. 42. Pick a number. 33.
Pick a number. I'll go back to 18.
That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. We're going to need to check your credentials. I'm not sure you can legally work here.
Maybe not, especially as long as I've been here. No, my three-year-old is excited because we're both three now. So 33
and three.
Yeah, that's so nice. He likes that. He said, you're three like me now.
Did he do anything for you this morning?
Yeah, he did. He he came out. He had made a card, and he brought it to me. And yeah, Deanna had gotten me some new work shoes, which I needed. And so he carried them out and carried them to me and gave me a hug, told me happy birthday, sang to me. So, yeah, it was nice.
Well, we were going to bring a Marilyn Monroe telegram in and have her sing to you, but corporate wouldn't approve it, so.
I wonder why.
I don't know why they wouldn't sign off on the payment. And no offense to you, I wasn't paying for that myself. So.
Mr. President.
Mr. Producer. I appreciate you giving me the day off yesterday. Thank you for that.
Yeah, well, you were working hard.
The stories were piling up, but we got them knocked out. Yeah, you and Brad did an excellent job as always, which is we'll alternate. You should always be a host at least one day a week.
It's starting to feel that way. I'm going to get my rhythm a little bit, but we best combination. We get the two of you together, so we'll get y'all back soon.
Well,
but
as we look ahead to the weekend, we've got several stories coming at us in today's issue of the Daily Journal, as well as things to look at for the weekend, including Scott Morris's movie review and what to do in the entertainment world and griping about local restaurant eateries.
Yeah.
No, not griping. We love our local restaurant eateries.
As
long as they have the cups that they want. And we'll go ahead and get started this morning with our resident law enforcement expert, William Moore. William, how are you doing?
We're doing just fine today.
And I guess you're just about off. We talked about yesterday counting down the days on the city government duty. I guess it's just about done now.
I got a feeling I'll probably have to train him a little bit. But yes, I'm fixing to switch gears and start dealing more with small governments instead of large governments.
Big governments. You've been wearing a lot of hats. Jeff Markham is just about to start as our new city government reporter. I guess his first day is today. I'm sure you'll be hearing him on the podcast soon and seeing his stories in the paper soon as he gets his feet under him and gets going. But William, we wanted to ask you about a story you actually had in yesterday's paper, a big grant for the Boys and Girls Club. Tell us a little bit about it.
The Boys and Girls Clubs of North Mississippi, they have five different clubhouses scattered throughout North Mississippi. They recently got a grant from the Bob and Renee Parsons Foundation. Bob Parsons is the guy who started GoDaddy.com, and he looked for a way to give back to the community. And the vast majority of his projects have all been in the Phoenix area. So I was kind of surprised that North Mississippi landed a $500,000 grant. But it's all because he bought some motorcycle dealerships in the Memphis area. Found out about the Boys and Girls Club here. He's always been a strong believer in Boys and Girls Club. So the group here ended up getting, they applied and ended up getting $500,000 in grants. $100,000 is going to the Northside Center in Tupelo. Another $100,000 is going to the New Albany location. And $300,000 will go to the Oxford Clubhouse. The way they sort of kicked off and let everybody know about the grant was they sort of introduced the community to a brand new hardwood floor.
Wow.
At the facility on North Green Street.
It looks nice in the pictures.
It's quite an impressive floor considering for probably the past 40 years, it's just been a painted concrete floor. And when I was in the sixth grade, I took PE in that gym and it was just an old concrete floor. So, yes, it's been around for a while, and it's a very welcome change.
I didn't realize that was used for the King School used that as its gym?
years ago, that school has it's changed. And
that's now classifications, ECEC.
But yet, back in the mid-70s, that was where all sixth graders went.
Huh. And they used the gym. And that's they would the go to the, you know, and
when it was raining or something, you would go walk over to the gym there at the Northside Center and have PE.
Wow. Didn't realize that. Interesting. Having the wood floor, I saw there was a quote in the story from Shipman Sloan, who's a board member.
He's the vice president of the board.
About just the value. Can you speak a little bit about kind of what he said about the value? I mean, people say, oh, well, it's just a wood floor, but it sounds like it can really help them in their mission a little
bit. They're hoping that it will help them attract older kids. They serve kids up to 18. So, I mean, they're hoping to get the older teams will want to come play on the nice hardwood floor and be productive role models for the younger kids. And, you know, truthfully, I mean, the new floor costs $35,000. So they still have another $65,000, which they'll be using for renovations all around the building to help clean up, spruce up. They'll redo the front entrance to make it ADA compliant. So, I mean, it's a win-win for the Boys and Girls Club. I mean, they're getting this money that they normally – well, they're getting money that they can do things now that they normally wouldn't get to do, because most of the times they take the money they do have and put it into – staff and services. They want to get the best bang for their buck to, you know, directly impact the children.
How big was the need for some of these things? Are these things that are on the wish list?
I mean, especially the building here in Tupelo was old and it was in dire need of repairs and renovations, but, you know, they just didn't have the money to do that. And so, I mean, it is a very welcome shot in the arm that will help them, you know, clean up the building, help with renovations and make it more appealing, which will probably help them attract more boys and girls.
Sure, and you talked a little bit earlier about attracting more older students, and I know they've had some success. I remember we did a series on teen pregnancy and the impact of it. I remember talking to them at the time about the fact that they hadn't had any teen pregnancies you know, among their members. I know that's something that they're very proud of. But
yeah, it's a very successful program. And, you know, there's actually two clubhouses in Tupelo. You have the other one at Haven Acres, which is a fairly new building, so it doesn't need the renovation at this point. So, I mean, basically they're bringing the clubhouse on the north end of town up to par with the other one.
So this will all, the Tupelo 100,000 will all just be for the north side?
It'll all just be at the north side center.
What about the Oxford one? I know that's the largest amount.
It's, well, one of the reasons it's the largest amount is because that's the only building that the Boys and Girls Club actually owns. So the other ones are owned by cities or schools.
So there's more maintenance needs.
It's more maintenance, but also because they own it, they feel more comfortable putting more money into that one. And one of the things, they have an outdoor open-air basketball court, which they're wanting to enclose to make it an all-weather court where they can actually use it all throughout the winter or when it's raining.
Sure. Well, great. That's a great thing for them, and they're excited. And as you know, we said, it's just a great program for youth across the area. So I know that they'll use it well. Thanks, William, for joining us and telling us more about it.
All right. Glad to be here.
And now we go to Daily Journal health reporter Michaela Morris. Michaela, how are you today?
I'm good. How about you?
Good. Doing great. Good to have you. You had an interesting story today about Bruce Ridgway, who is the vice president for facilities?
For facilities management and construction.
At the hospital, and is retiring after a long
29 years.
Wow.
So he arrived in 1986 just as a new round of construction was getting going. He has had his finger on changing the face of the hospital in every direction at least twice. He's touched pretty much every facility as far as the community hospitals. He figured he had built 66 buildings during his tenure, most of them clinics. And part of that is healthcare and hospital systems are just very dynamic. They're buildings that are used 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days.
So you've got to constantly maintain them and replace.
Constant maintenance and constant growth, because healthcare is always changing. They need new spaces. They've got new services. What they need to do changes. They've got new equipment that needs different spaces. It's a never-ending kind of cycle. And part of it is just, I mean, imagine your house with thousands of people in and out of it. I mean, just keeping the walls painted is a full-time job.
Yeah, sure. So when he started, they had just built the women's hospital.
They just built the women's hospital, and they had built the wellness center. But he was part of building what we think of as the cancer center where radiation oncology is now. He was part of two expansions out on Gloucester Street. He built the East Tower. He built a North Addition. He's done at least two major emergency department renovations, of course, and most recently was part of that West Bed Tower renovation. So they, you know, built hospitals in Iuka, Hamilton, and Eupora as far as the system. And it's not that he's swinging the hammer himself, but just being there to coordinate the range of details.
And that was a cool thing when you were kind of talking about this, you know, off mic and telling me about the story, just some of the background stories that he has about, you know, you hear all the time about these jobs that you don't really know exist or what people are doing. And first of all, I don't know how many people really think of someone that's over construction for hospital system, but even more the kind of things that he's had to do, some of the details that you've got to look into that job. Tell us a little bit about that from your conversation with him.
Well, it's kind of fascinating because he drills down to the smallest details while maintaining this really big picture vision that really goes over not just a year or 2 years, but he's thinking decades out. So they had, he said 30 meetings on bathroom fixtures. And while that might seem strange, they have to bring all of these people together, from the construction folks and the architects to the clinical staff that is going to be helping patients with the space, and trying to figure out, okay, is the water, is having the faucet here going to send water out into the patient room? Can you get a wheelchair maneuver through the room? Is that a durable material? He kind of laughed and said they've been on a 25-year odyssey to find the perfect floor that is low maintenance and high durability. So he's very excited they finally found it.
So he's going out with a bang.
He's going out with a bang.
That's when he finally made his decision to retire. His quest was...
Well, he's a really fascinating guy. I've gotten to know him over the past 15 years that I've covered the Health Beat, just because hospital construction is very newsworthy for our readers. And he's really fascinating. He has lots of hobbies, lots of projects at home. He actually is really a master woodworker. But I think the most fascinating thing about him is he has built a treehouse for his grandsons, who are now 4 and 6. And they tell him what he wants. He recently added a zip line. So
yeah, it'd be fun. Fun to be those grandkids. I think your story said his honeydew list is how long?
Well, I don't know if it's... He has 25 pages of projects.
To do just around the house, right?
Just around the house, things that he wants to do. I think he's assigned himself most of those. Sure. But yes, he has plans. He's planning to do a split rail fence in the yard. And, you know, he's a fascinating guy, yet he's not somebody who sits still.
Yeah, so his last day was yesterday?
It was yesterday.
And who is his replacement?
His name is Todd Davis. He's worked with Bruce Ridgway for years and really talked about how not only has Bruce Ridgway shepherded all these projects and brought together these people across the hospital to talk about these spaces, but he has also kind of shepherded careers of all these people who've worked with him over the years and helped them grow. So it's neat to see him as a builder of buildings and a builder of people.
People, yeah, sure. A couple other cool stories from your article today was one, the Longtown construction.
Yeah.
Sounds like that must have been a fascinating process.
It really was. They knew going in that there had been a Chickasaw village in that area, so they knew they needed an archaeologist to look at the spaces they were considering. And they found 22 remains. And in 1990, a federal law was passed that you had to get permission to move the remains of indigenous peoples in the U.S. So, and previously, the Chickasaw Nation had not granted that permission, but they have a special relationship with people in Tupelo, and really understood, Bruce said, the importance of the medical community in the larger community. And so the hospital folks, I think, approached them very respectfully. They were receptive. And so all they asked was what they be reinterred in a solemn place, and that the site of the village be marked appropriately. And actually, a group comes every year from the nation to visit the site. And this didn't make it in the story, but there had been a little gravel road and they had to walk. Well, these are some older folks now. And so they ended up building them a little parking lot and a sidewalk to make it easier for them to get into the site. And from Bruce Ridgway's standpoint, it was just a small, simple thing to do. And he said that they were so appreciative, and it, you know, it's those small things you do for folks, but it's a very cordial relationship.
Yeah, sure. And then the other thing that you mentioned was the crane falling into the parking garage. That had to be a crazy day.
He says he's still not sure he really understands how it happened, but they were very, very lucky that it didn't happen at shift change, and no one was injured, and there was very little property damage, but it was just one of those freak wind storms that blew the crane up in the air, and it came down in a way that damaged not only the parking garage they were constructing, but the adjacent existing parking garage. Thankfully, no one was hurt, but the idea that you have to find a place for 900 hospital employees to park so they can get to their job and take care of people. And they were able to do that in 24 hours. He thinks of that as his most mission impossible task was to make that happen. But they also had to do things like they do these pre-occupancy meetings where they bring representatives from the construction side and the clinical side, or whoever is going to be using that space, to plan how they are going to move in. So, you know, figuring out what has to be done first and what needs to be in place to take care of patients, and how you're going to move phones and computers and equipment. And, you know, do you need to move beds in before this particular equipment goes in? Or does the, you know, all of these things, so they get these in. So when they moved into the West Bed Tower and the expansion, they had more than a dozen of these meetings once a week. Wow. For every nursing unit. So, but it means that there's always hiccups, but it means things roll much more smoothly.
Wow. Well, quite a career. And I thank you for writing about it and joining us to tell more about it.
Happy to do it.
All right. Scott Moore is joining us now to talk about one of the worst reviewed films of the year from what I've seen, or at least personal opinions, given that it's one of the worst reviewed films of the year. Pan. The Peter Pan.
Origin story.
Reboot, what have you, yeah.
What have you. So let's start a couple of, maybe a month or two ago, okay, when I first started seeing the trailers for this film. I was sold by the trailer. I mean, I've learned to know that trailers don't always result in a good movie. But I was hoping to see this movie. I was saying, oh, wow, October 23rd, October 12th, I'll be ready. And, oh, yeah, it was painful.
It looked painful, and I'm with you. I was the same way. Seeing the trailer, I was a little hesitant on the casting of Tiger Lily when I saw that. But that was,
you know, actually I thought that kind of worked. That's Rooney Mara, and you know, instead of using Native Americans, yeah, they use like people from all over the world, kind of a tribe of world people in it to be the natives, which I thought, you know, stepping away, a little political correctness, sure, but I mean, that Disney version, didn't do the best.
Well, that Disney version is very politically incorrect by today's standards.
Highly politically incorrect. So And there were a couple of – this movie had some moments that were nice, that were interesting. The relationship between Peter and Hook in this as it grows, the whole time – they start – I'm just going to say they start off as friends, because you're not going to see this movie if you have any sense. They start off as friends, and then you're wondering – and Hook has both hands. And so you're thinking, how is he going to lose his hand, and how is his friendship going to fall apart? So they play with that the whole way through. And – it's an interesting kind of dynamic, but this is such a hodgepodge, such a mess, such a crammed together bit of colorful things that don't make sense, that don't follow one from the other, that after a while you just kind of realize these people don't like me. These filmmakers, they don't want to make a film that serves the audience in very many ways. Maybe they're trying. At one point, when we first meet Hugh Jackman as Blackbeard, thousands of people in this mine chant "Smells Like Teen Spirit" by Nirvana, and I thought this might be the most sublimely weird movie of the year, and no, it was just stupid. It didn't make any sense.
I've heard several people talk about that scene specifically, and they have cited where they expected me to take this seriously when they were doing that.
I was dumbfounded, and I thought, well, I'm going to give them the chance. I mean, maybe it's a Rocky Horror type of thing. Maybe there's something here that's going to, I don't know, and they'll be doing these things all the way through. Maybe it'll work. I don't know. Let's just see.
It's got a great cast. I'm a huge Peter Pan fan my entire life. I was excited about this. I kind of thought maybe they were doing the Hook thing, like the Robin Williams film, and just doing their own little take on this, which is what they have done. But it just doesn't seem to have.
Just from the very beginning, It just seems strange. And I gave it a D. It's one at the Malco. I could have gone lower maybe, but there are parts of it that I cared about. And mainly, I was curious about how that relationship between those two was going to develop. But at the same time, I don't think I'm surprised anybody. You know he's going to meet Tinkerbell in this. And when it happens, it's just so freaking boring. I mean, you're about to meet a fairy for the first time, and it's like, oh, I can hear her speak. And that's about it. You know, and then that's it. That doesn't make any sense to me.
It sounds like most of the film didn't make a whole lot of sense. I enjoyed the idea, because I sometimes like tinkering with origin stories of Hook and Pan being friends, to show how Neverland came to be, but it just doesn't seem like it works.
And I'm
out.
Still a fan of the Neverending Story back from the I believe the 80s. We have it. We bought it for the kids, so we've seen it, and so that kind of fantastical kind of environment is fun to visit sometimes, but it just doesn't work. I mean, there's some really nice graphics, some really interesting things that you can see. But what's weird is, also every so often, you're encountered with the graphics you would have seen in the 1980s. It's like so you have these beautiful vistas, and then all of a sudden, the guy playing Garrick Hudland, I think how you pronounce it, I'm not sure about that, the guy playing Hook is like bouncing up and down on a trampoline and doing like a 1980s variety special effect flips in the air. It was just kind of, what's happening?
Sounds like the Christopher Walken musical NBC aired last Christmas was far more enjoyable to
Hey, it might well have been. This. I skipped that because I didn't want to have, I was seeing a train wreck coming, and I didn't want to have my love and admiration for Christopher Walken sullied more than Joe Dirt did.
I saw somewhere, too, talking about all the effects that the green screen. There are some scenes where it's just obvious it's on a green screen and that gets distracting. Did you have that same impression?
I would just say that there were some seamless effects that were amazing, and there were some that were maybe a 1980s weather announcer could use. I mean, it was a weird, I'm not sure, apparently they had over $100 million to make this movie, and the director is Joe Wright. I have not looked him up, so maybe y'all can. I don't know what else he's done.
I was looking it up before this, Pride and Prejudice and Atonement, but I didn't, do you know which Pride and Prejudice? Is that the Keira Knightley?
Most recent one, yeah.
Well, my wife's a big fan.
Well, so he's used to like doing costume things, but apparently not used to doing things with a lot of special effects. I don't know. Jason Fuchs, who wrote this thing, and J.M. Barrie get some writing credits. That's just sad for J.M. Barrie. Can you just feel the rumble of his grave? If you're in England right now, anywhere near J.M. Barrie's grave, I mean, you ought to be a little bit frightened, especially with Halloween being so close. It wasn't horrible. as I'm making it out to be, there were some interesting moments to it because I had to sit there and watch it. But go see something else. Just go see something else, and you'll be better off.
Well, thank you, Scott.
Hey, next week, I promise, we're going to make this podcast great again.
And we're doing it, little by little. All right, staying on the entertainment theme, we'll go from movies to your scene section today. Derek?
We're approaching the Halloween holidays, so of course this weekend begins the TCT's Haunted Theater at the Lyric.
We talked about last week.
Which is always a huge thing. Yeah, it starts tomorrow, as a matter of fact. So I'll be through this weekend, the next weekend, and then also Halloween weekend coming up. Good time to go and get freaked out and scared and people chasing you and psycho clowns and all that.
Sounds like fun. It's time of year to do it.
Yeah, always. There's a lot of haunted houses, of course, in the area that always do their thing. I always thought we should put a word out and get a big compilation of everything doing this, but again, this year that fell flat and we didn't get it done. But
I thought you were going to say that we ought to do one like in the press room or something. Oh, that'd be fun. That'd be really fun. Yeah.
That noise enough back there is terrifying. Even
yeah,
in
the dark,
you
just turn the press on.
Somebody would walk into that thing.
You need to look into that.
Well, you could have a maze out here just with the cubicles.
Yeah, you could.
I'm lost just for the restructuring in the past few days now when I can't even. I'm like a rat trying to get to the cheese. when getting out of here.
You know, we talked one time, for people who haven't been in our office, you know, if you can imagine cubicles and make a maze, everybody in the company had to read Who Moved My Cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to show up on, I don't know if it was Halloween or just one day, one person in a dressed as a mouse, and then I guess a couple people with cheese and all chasing each other through the cubicle.
Either that or Pac-Man. I think Pac-Man would be the other appropriate thing.
That'd be fun too. Like you see the improv troops, you know, on YouTube all the time doing that kind of thing on the subway or whatever. That'd be fun.
We've got the perfect cubicle set up for a Pac-Man out there. But again, check that out at the Lyric. Tickets are $15 each. It starts at 7 p.m. tomorrow night and again on Saturday night. And takes about 23-25 minutes to get through the whole thing, so they push through several groups. They start groups every 3 or 5 minutes.
So if when you were to go, you just kind of wait a little bit until they start taking another group.
And then, yeah, they just take another group through, and they take a few at a time and move them. It's always better to go with a buddy.
Yeah,
the buddy
sure.
system is very important at the 10th Annual Haunted Theater.
Especially when you're in line and you hear screams.
You're going to hear some screams in there. Some of them were me when I was doing the story last week.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest with you. They let me run a course or two on it that weren't totally complete as of last week, but it definitely made for a terrifying experience.
Yeah.
Well, you're so disoriented, and I think I talked about this last week. You're so disoriented because I know that theater so well, but
right.
when they build up these huge walls and this labyrinth of mazes, I have no clue where I am. And they shut the lights off, and it's just really disorienting.
How is it? I know you had auditions for the Christmas Carol that you were directing the other day. How are you able to still do that while this is going on?
TCT Off-Broadway, their black box location on Franklin Street where they do their one-act plays, where we did auditions and we'll rehearse there for a couple of weeks until after the 1st of November when Haunted Theater's over with, and then we'll move on.
Then you'll move over.
Yeah.
Sure.
So excited for that. As always, lots of concerts going on in the area this weekend.
Yeah, you got a couple on your punch list.
Yes, we've of course got the concert grid inside where you can find those out. Javier Matos will be at the Blue Canoe tonight at 8 p.m., which would be a good one. Also, the Black Sheep Revival going on at the Public House downtown Tupelo. I've not gotten to visit the Public House yet. It's
it's
open
things.
For lunch as well. We ought to make a trip down there
one afternoon.
But that's put on by Ironclad Tattoo Gallery out of Saltillo and the Bonnevilles from Ireland. This is only the second time they've played in the United States. They will be performing on Saturday night at 7 p.m. So you can find out more information about that in your scene today.
Derek, I thought you had an interesting column. I mean, you've often got an interesting column. I always look forward to reading it every Thursday.
Thank you. But, I appreciate that.
One, I think I was saying earlier, columns had a Seinfeld
feel
to it to me. Is just
I guess it could be considered a Seinfeld feel. I'm a big fan of Danvers, and it's weird because there's all these other Danvers, like in Memphis, there's five or six other ones, and they're totally disenfranchised from
There was one in Oxford when I was a student. I don't think it's open anymore.
It's not there anymore. When you go to the other ones, they've got like catfish and po' boys and all this other stuff the one doesn't here. I enjoy the one here for what it has. I'm used to getting a large plastic take-home cup with my sweet tea because I love Danvers sweet tea. And
you probably get hundreds of them at your house.
I've got two or three on my desk here at work as well. I keep my pens in them. And they're the drink, the cup of choice in my kitchen. There's an entire cupboard. I may be part of the problem. I don't know if I put that in the column or not. But the reason they probably got rid of these things is from people like me. Not that you're not supposed to take them, but you know, it's just the quantity of them alone. But they're not.
When
there
you go
anymore.
Back five times in a day for sweet tea, it's hard
to
keep up.
I don't do that. I don't abuse the privilege. But I noticed over the summer, and I didn't put in the column. I've had a few emails today that were like, the red cups are still there, and they are, but they were gone for a period of time. The normal size paper cups that with the logo on them were it's just part of the meal to me. It's an established thing.
And Danvers particular, I mean, Danvers is a very, I mean, you call it Tupelo's Cheers, but it is, besides the people that you see there, and particularly for you having grown up here, but to me it seems like a place that's very tradition oriented, and you know, people mm-hmm. have gone to it for years, and I would imagine it's probably almost the same as it was when you first went to it.
I don't think anything but the carpet in there has changed since then. Definitely the artwork and the light fixtures are the same. But, you know, I think the same groups of people seem to always go after church on Sunday. It's always the staple. And so it's
people gotten married there.
People have gotten married there. We had a story over Labor Day of a couple, and it's apparently the fifth or sixth wedding that has happened. At Danvers, employees meeting each other there and then getting married and holding reception. And they get married there? I don't remember.
No, the reception was there. They got married there. But
get married there, get
in line. But yeah, all you eligible bachelors and bachelorettes out there, go work at Danvers.
I mean, why not? Why not use Danvers as your reception?
Or if you're looking to meet the soulmate of your dreams, go work at Danvers.
And come to think of it, and until you just said that, I'd forgotten about it. They actually had plastic cups made just for that ceremony.
They did. That's why.
Now I'm screwed over doubly.
That's where their cup budget went.
That's where it went to the ceremony.
Patience, Derek.
But yeah, but so I just there. It's part of the meal to me to get my cup, and I don't like change.
No,
I'm not a fan of change.
Especially not at Danvers.
So I expressed my dissatisfied with that. No, I love Danvers, and you could tell by looking at me I love Danvers because obviously I'm overweight. But but it's always been part of the fun of going there for me. Now I just sit there and stare at the clear plastic cup when they hand it to me, and gives me great grief. But that is not entertainment worthy, and as you said, it was more Seinfeld than anything, because it was a story about nothing.
No, I appreciate it. No, I meant Seinfeld in the sense of just kind of taking something small and finding an entertaining value
too big
in
a deal
it.
Like the Chinese restaurant.
Look at it that way too. But yeah, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was a good kind of slice of life.
Your picture's in the paper, and I'm trying to figure out if you're wearing the same shirt in the picture that you are, right? And you're not. But
no,
it almost
I'm not.
Looked like you were. Because some people, I think I opted out of it when I found mine this year. When we have birthdays here or anniversaries, they stick us in the classified department and say, happy birthday or happy anniversary, your time at the Daily Journal. And I saw that on my birthday earlier this year, and I was like, that's got to go. I can't do that.
I didn't know you could opt out. Was it because it was in your section, so you saw it on the proofs?
I went to die. Yeah, no, because I don't see the classified pages before they come out. So it was that day, and I ran to our HR office, and I was like, can
Scrooge.
I get out of this? I don't like my face. It's bad enough being on a column. It's even larger on that thing, but it's good to know it's your birthday.
Well, thanks.
Are those your new shoes? Those are not your new
those
shoes.
Those are not my new shoes, okay. No. I'll have them soon.
All right. Well, we should be back again on Monday.
We will, and it may be me here again. I think Brad told me he had another commitment Monday.
Well,
on
good.
Mondays, Lauren is off. I know we haven't gotten Lauren in here recently. She's also busy being a photographer.
We should bring Rod in.
We need to bring Rod
well.
in. Let's do it.
Our editor, Rod Well, Hardo, somebody will be here on Monday behind the microphone talking to you. We just don't know who yet.
We'll be here, and just make sure you're on the other side of the microphone listening to us. Also, want to mention a couple of housekeeping notes. Just a reminder, today is Thursday, which is the day we come out with a new episode of our new college sports podcast, Double Coverage. That's Ole Miss beat reporter Parrish Alford and Mississippi State beat reporter Logan Lowry talking about the upcoming games for those two schools, as well as just news and notes. They do that first as a Google Hangout every Thursday. That's probably already happened by the time you listen to this. It might still be on our website, but if you go to djournal.com, I think they'll also post it on their blogs, and you can watch the video of them. But it's also available in iTunes, Double Coverage. We've got a website, doublecoverage.djournal.com. And another note, too, Chili Fest Friday. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, but just a reminder, we will have a Daily Journal table there. And one of the things that we'll be doing is trying to get the word out more about this podcast. And they're going to have, and again, I don't remember what it is. It's some kind of prize, baked goods, something for people who have downloaded the memo. Also, for all of you listening now that have already done so, if you take it by a Daily Journal tent at Chili Fest, they'll have something for you there.
Yep. And like I said, you can find us online at DJournal now on the Twitter. Also at DJournal Memo is our Twitter specifically for the podcast. But our website, memo.djournal.com, or where you can find all the news from today, including Scott's movie review, djournal.com. We also want to tell you about Thrive Marketing, which is a full-service marketing company here in Tupelo, providing website search engine optimization, social media management, email and text messaging services for local businesses. You can find them online also at thrive.ms. And Chris is on the Twitter at Chris Kiefer.
At Chris Kiefer.
Spell it however you want. It'll come up.
K-I-E-F-F-E-R.
It's not as... not as catchy as M-I-C-K-E-Y, M-O-U-S-E.
No, but it's I before E.
Except after K. And then...
even after K?
Actually, it is after K. And I'm at W. Derek Russell on the Twitter, and we will see you guys next week.
And Brad, is that Brad Lockie?
Lockie. That's right. We gotta, defend him. See, it's not fun if it's
no. No, and I missed my opportunity yesterday while you were out. He actually paused for it. He said Brad Locke, and my mind was just like off in space, and he was waiting for me to say the E. And
we've conditioned him to it now.
So your presence was missed.
Oh, well. All right. Well, we will be back again next week. We'll see you guys then.